The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are Tony Payne and Cole Hammack, certified financial planners. And today we're talking about a really emotional but important conversation that I think many of you can relate to. Blended family finances made easy. It's never an easy situation to put two families together on a utilitarian level. That is, I mean, it takes a lot of love, a lot of patience, a lot of tolerance. But when you're talking about financial planning, man, it really takes a lot of work and a lot of hands-on communication. So we're going to give you some things to put on your radar as you set yourself up for success today. First question I have is, I mean, merging finances in a blended family. So, you know, maybe second or third marriage, a couple of kids, balancing independence and sharing responsibilities. You know, how do you have that conversation with your clients? You know, what's the first thing you kind of say to them as you're getting them started?
Well, I guess real scenario, or we can go through a couple different examples, but it may be someone, or likely is someone we're already working with. They've met that special someone. They're coming into the plan. Two plans become one, if we can call it that. And it may be someone who's a little later on, and maybe it is that restart or blended family, I'll say, or it may be at the very beginning there, right out of school. Either scenario, though, we have the idea of, first, have you talked about finances? Are you familiar with how the other person views and their finances? You know, that's not a first date maybe topic, but to be able to go in and say, here's some of these things that may not normally come up, but if we know money issues are one of the number one causes of breakups and divorce, well, it makes a lot of sense to have that money conversation early on. So to me, that's the first step, and I know we'll go through a lot more, but conversation.
That's probably really tough, because I think talking about money is hard enough, and especially if you're part of a generation where you grew up being told not to ask about it. When you're meeting somebody and you're starting to have feelings for them, and you're, you know, seeing the wedding bells, you know, down the line, it's got to be very difficult to encourage people to kind of come out of that box and have that conversation.
Yeah, you're marrying a person, not a credit score. We know that. But at the end of the day, some of those behaviors that led to that credit score might be the personality type that maybe doesn't mesh with you. So it's not to say that you're married for whatever financial reasons or purposes, but if you're not in alignment on those things, you're setting yourself up for things that may not be so positive.
What are some of the complexities people can face when they kind of start putting their finances together? Like a bullet point list, if you would.
Yeah, well, I think part of it's just figuring out what sort of, I think people probably come into it trying to create some level of equality or consistency or expectation of your obligations within it. So that's probably going to be the most difficult part, figuring out how you really create that delineation of roles within that new financial unit. So I would mark that as kind of my number one, is figure out what your obligations are. And that's really, you have to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Right? So it's all open and honest, because otherwise you guys are almost operating at odds with one another.
Mm-hmm. Well, like we were saying too, where the complications really may come in too is when maybe your partner's at the same law firm or something and you're earning the same amount of money, that may be easy to say, let's go 50-50 on everything.
Yeah.
But let's say one person's earning disparately more than the other. How do you divvy that up? I mean, fair is such a subjective term. Fair is what you two discuss and you're comfortable with. And that, I think, is really what is so important about having the discussions early on. once you've set a precedent, it's really hard to go back on that. So that's the other part, too, of have these open discussions. If you wanted your children to have everything, if you wanted something, have it early on. Make that clear. That might be something that is hopefully a news flash for that other person, but it's something that they'll know is important to you.
You're talking about like specific accounts or specific belongings.
Yeah, again, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole,
but yeah.
And I think the next part is figuring out, does it make sense to merge finances? Because it's one thing kind of speaking that separation aspect or setting those obligations for specific percentages or however you want to break down obligations. But some people, they may feel a little bit more comfortable saying, well, we have these joint goals, these joint plans, these joint bills. Does it make sense to merge? And that conversation is going to be different for everybody, especially if you've had a bad divorce or two bad divorces or whatever the blend may be. Mm-hmm. So figuring out kind of where your comfort level is, again, also very important.
So you guys, let's see, your certified financial planners, coaches, mentors, marriage counselors, now pre-marriage counselors in this case.
We do it all.
There's a few hats here, but that's part of when you're working with the family and you're working with people. It's not just numbers or accounts. It's all these other factors mm-hmm. where we are dealing with people more than we're dealing with numbers.
Yeah, that's true. We don't like the word budget, I know, but do you have suggestions for people to create a budget that's fair for everybody, you know, biological and stepchildren included? Is there a way to really do that efficiently?
That fair word is a trigger again.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about fair, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Hey, every kid went to private school, now you're in the family, you're part of the private school train, everybody's gotten a new car, you're part of that train. I don't know. These are examples, though, that circumstances may have changed on your end, feelings might have changed. So again, it comes back to discussion of what is fair is our expectation. Because when we're talking cash flow, in that example where people are earning almost the same amount of money, well, 50-50 may be how you divide a new mortgage. But if someone's earning a lot less, you might do that percentage. Hey, I'll pay 70%, you pay 30%. We'll make it proportional to our incomes. There's several ways that you could do it, but it's all about what's fair. And fair is what you two discuss and agree.
Yeah, I'm thinking too, because you had brought up the idea of college. The idea that maybe, Tony, to your point, you're coming into this relationship, you're two people maybe equal footing in terms of finances, but let's say there's an ex-spouse that did make considerably more, and that ex-spouse is putting their kids through college.
That would complicate things.
Yeah, then what are the expectations for you and your kids? There might not always be that fairness or that equality.
Mm-hmm. It's what you can do.
Yeah, all you can do is do your best, right?
So managing, this is a great segue to the next point, managing debts from past relationships while you're still trying to set yourself up in this new relationship for stability and a future together. Want to address sort of existing debts and obligations. You know, what I think, you know, we start out when we meet with clients, the first thing we hit is living expenses. Is that always the first step here too?
In a lot of ways. I mean, I can't really say a one step or a first step because it's a process with a lot all at once. But that really is a basic, though, of every financial plan. What do we need? What are we spending? And that could be at the individual level. When a household forms or two people come together, then you revisit that and say, what do we need together? Hopefully or normally we might see expenses cut. You're going from two domiciles to one, two phone plans, two sets of insurance. You know, hopefully things get a little more economical with the two of you, but that's also part of the discussion.
And I definitely think this is, and Tony maybe agree or disagree, but I would say this is definitely a second date conversation.
All right. Last time you and I get a little testy with each other, I'll agree with you on this one.
All right,
this
perfect.
Time. Don't make me sit in between you again
all
this
right,
time.
All right.
Talk about updating your estate plan to treat all children equitably. Now, that's a tough one, even in, you know, an established one family situation. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about estate planning and inheritance, the importance of updating wills and estate plans to reflect the new family dynamics.
I'm attaching myself to one word you said there, and it's really important. Equitable, which would mean equal, is different than fair. And we've been using that phrase fair a lot. Equitable is even different than fair, perhaps. You know, is it divided by eight because we have eight children, or, hey, this is the youngest, or these are the old? there are so many things that go into equitable. You know, is it equal truly mathematically, or is it fair in the sense of, well, we've already put you through school. You already have your opportunity. We don't have to divide by eight because I already spent a lot on your education and trying to get you ahead. That's up to each individual and family. I keep coming back to that, but mm-hmm. Hopefully what we're discussing are some of the points that as the two of you sit down, okay, here's a head start on some of the things we should talk about or consider.
Yeah, because my take on this one is like, bar none, you should absolutely update the estate plan.
Immediately.
That's crucial, whether that's updating the wills, considering a trust. Does that make sense? We revisited that on another podcast recently. Power of attorneys, updating beneficiaries for everything. Like, all of that should be done when you're entering into another relationship. But the point of
after
equity.
You're in the relationship,
yes,
after it's
certainly,
official,
certainly.
Not before, right?
Yeah, well, maybe cleaning up from the post, right, or from the prior one, but maybe not being proactive on the current one. Agreed. But as far as finding something that's equitable, I mean, that's 100% on an individual or group basis. Like, there's no way we can really weigh on a perfect solution there.
And you really hit on something important there too, Cole, because sometimes, and I'll say the old school approach may have been, hey, if we're married, that simplifies the estate plan. He or she or they get whatever's left.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you might be long-term partners and not even
right.
be married.
Right.
And that's where the estate plan, beneficiaries, yeah. tax planning sometimes, where that really comes in, because you don't get some of maybe the automatic things
right.
as being married. And that's not to say you have to change things, but be aware of that.
Right. That's a great point. I was focused on the nuptials, but that's actually a really great point. That's the modern life right now.
Yeah, there's so much here, too. Yeah. I mean, whether it's a common law marriage or your state recognizes that, there are so many intricacies that when you're doing this, to talk to a professional
mm-hmm.
probably makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Discussing life insurance, we talk about this on another show, so you can get some really good details on what life insurance is and how to go about it. And we're not insurance agents, but this is something that we deal with every day. How do people update their life insurance, and what should they be looking for to protect the new family?
Yeah, so I think life insurance, especially in a blended family, can be pretty unique in the sense that there are many instances where you may have an existing life insurance policy, but that policy is kind of earmarked exclusively for a prior spouse. So there may be arrangements within the divorce decree where that beneficiary needs to remain the spouse, the ex-spouse, if something happens
mm-hmm.
to you. So I'd say first and foremost, pay attention to what you do have, what the agreements were in the past, so that way we're not getting ourselves in any legal hot water if we do make adjustments.
And beneficiaries, I mean, we talk about that a lot. That's so important to align
mm-hmm.
your beneficiaries on paper. And you can really drill down. You can give percentages and give as much as you want or as little as you want to individuals
yeah.
in your life insurance policy, right?
What? Yeah. And one of the other points with that, just to add on real quick, though, I mean, it comes up a lot with our military families or people who are in different professions where they're putting their body out there, and the idea that you may not be officially married yet, but if this person is really serious in your life, that alone might be enough to update beneficiaries, buy insurance, you know, to wait until the wedding 2 years from now or that perfect date. If you two are building a life together and that's the plan, you probably want to take some of those other steps proactively and have them in place, because you'd hate to have something happen, and because they were a fiancé or they weren't legally recognized, their voice means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the worst thing to happen if you think about it.
And life insurance is approached for different reasons, right? So if we can tell people the different approaches for using life insurance before we move to the next point.
So I'd say, generally speaking, the purpose of life insurance is to protect what you've not yet saved. So the idea is, say, for example, you still have a mortgage, or you have a kid together even, or whatever it may be, you want to maybe provide a leg up. Life insurance, generally speaking, is going to be the most cost-effective way to go about doing that, because you've not yet saved or reached other goals to fund that otherwise. So it's a way that you can kind of fill that gap and protect the everything else in your absence.
Yeah, no, nothing really to add there. I think that was a great answer.
In a blended family situation, you might have, we talked about this earlier, kids that are, you know, wanting to go to college or approaching college age.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a great way for people to approach that conversation as a blended family, college savings?
That's where it gets tricky, I think.
Yeah, the word fairly comes up, comes to my mind.
And again, through experience, years of doing this, precedent seems to be what people equate to fair. So whatever might have been done for that oldest or that first child, that seems to be the fair that they come back to, is I already started this precedent, I got to continue it. That's fair for some people. And you think about all the changes that might have happened in the middle, whether that's just the cost of college, what you're earning, your situation, that's where I really try to struggle, or you may struggle with what is fair.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be new, and that's where the idea, too, of college and that discussion, have it open. Do we even have the money to cover this? Are we on track for our plan? If none of those are true, well, then perhaps what was done before we can't do again. And that's important to recognize the reality sometimes.
What are some of the tools people can use for education savings in these situations?
I mean, the best case scenario is a 529 plan.
For older children, right?
Yeah. So if we're talking education, there's really no better tool out there than a 529 plan for it. So every state operates one. Some are a little bit better than others. Some are a little bit more flexible than others. So definitely do the research in terms of what your state offers or if there are any tax benefits for it. But the fact that it grows tax-deferred and comes out tax-free for qualified education expenses, you're not going to find anything else like that.
Does it ever make sense for somebody to cash in their 401k to pay for one of their kids' college?
I don't think we're going to recommend it. It may make sense for some people, but it's definitely not the first thing that would come to mind.
Yeah,
I would really struggle with that.
Yeah.
I mean, your retirement is a finite date, or at least it's a lot closer, and you're going to have a lot less flexibility about making that money up. That youngster is going to have a whole career, a whole life, and hey, they went to college, isn't that an investment? They should have some earning potential. So that's where I would try to flip that to say, let's protect mom or dad, and along the way, if we're doing that, you're going to be in a better position to help the child if needed. But if you're not even in the stable position and they need help, well, what are we doing then? The opposite.
Just get in writing that the kids are going to take care of you when you're old, right?
Uh-huh, exactly.
Is that how it works?
It's got to be.
Prenups, postnups, trusts. Let's kind of talk a little bit about each of those and give people an idea of what the legal considerations are and the documentation they might need if they're individuals of high wealth. So let's talk about prenup first.
Yeah, cool.
So I was going to say, I don't even know necessarily that it needs to be individuals of high wealth. It's just, hey, you came into this relationship with your stuff. Maybe even it's a startup business or you have your retirement accounts and maybe we went through a bad divorce previously. We want to protect what it is we have. Then going into a prenup makes a lot of sense. The idea being that it's not because you don't trust the other person that you're doing a prenup.
That's always the way it translates.
I know. And it's one of the most difficult conversations to have because we have it generally with our clients. Say, we found someone, we're looking at getting married. Have you considered a prenup? And then there's almost that 1,000-yard stare. Like, well, what are you suggesting here?
Yeah.
It's even better when they bring that person into the meeting and you're meeting them the first time.
Yep.
Which I try to save that for a second meeting, almost like a second date. But when the wheels are really turning, it's hard. And to be a fiduciary and try to be independent, I have to be a person and recognize situations and social cues, but then I also have to be a fiduciary and do my due diligence and bring things up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's a balancing act sometimes.
It's tough.
Yeah. So, but it's helping what you bring into the relationship. It's protecting that. So the idea is, if everything works great, and that's the best case scenario. That's what everybody wants. You go into this relationship, it's going to be perfect. Bells, whistles, all the fun stuff. And we never need the prenup. That's awesome. But if that worst-case scenario happens, life happens, you grow apart, whatever, then you still have that protection there.
And then a post-nuptial, very similar. I mean, it's just whether it's before the wedding or after. Mm-hmm. But the idea, and where it may come into play is the business has grown or you have come into significant wealth. Something may have changed that wasn't there initially. And to keep things clean, set expectations, part of it's communication, but all it is formal communication. Here's what we agree to. Here we're laying out what should happen. And again, it's that planning that can feel a little awkward and out of place, but you're doing it in the event that something happens. Everyone was basically able to get what they wanted, what you two agreed to when times were good.
I'm confused by the postnup, as in every person.
Okay.
So give me some context. Give me like maybe a little story of how that works.
So depending upon, and this is where the legal can make it a little complicated, depending upon the state and all that. But to simplify it a little bit, you got married as kids, you had nothing, you built a great life together. Now your home building business is worth $10 million. That may be something where a postnuptial comes in that, you know what, that was you and your brother and you two grew this whole business and that's something that's really important to your brother here, that this is clear and we clean that up so that if something happens, they're able to continue the business. That may be something that involves a postnuptial where, you know what, I was never involved in that house building business. I know that's you and your brother's thing. We're enjoying the income. Maybe I'll get a life insurance or he'll buy us out, but there's a clear agreement there after we've been married that, hey, this is going to be the plan if something happens.
Gotcha. That makes better sense. Thank you.
And there's all kinds of other examples. I'm sure there may be attorneys listening who have a better idea there. And please email us. Let us know if there is a better example.
Yeah, great. So talking taxes, as a blended family, are there certain things that should be on the radar from a tax perspective? I mean, how can people kind of cut their liabilities and protect their benefits?
I think the first place my head goes is kids. Because generally speaking, only one spouse can claim the kids as a dependent on their tax returns. So that's usually who's the primary caregiver. So it's not, hey, we're going to get all these credits or all these deductions. You need to work with the prior spouse or the prior divorce decree to figure out, okay, well, who's getting what, who's claiming what from a tax perspective.
Yeah, the other part about taxes, and I guess I'll go there too, it's not just taxes. It's all the other things that might be in that prior divorce decree. There might be spousal support. There might be child support. There might be an expectation of kicking in for college. You might be required to provide health insurance for the children. You might be required to have life insurance, as Cole mentioned earlier. So all of those things, as well as the taxes, really play in to be aware of, because even something I'll say as silly or simple as, well, now I'm cohabitating with this new partner. We're not officially married, but hey, it made sense for us to move in together. Well, let some PI catch that, and part of your divorce decree was that stops, not even if you got married again, but if you were cohabitating. That's in some of these new agreements, and to be aware of what you signed or what might be in there is really relevant as you're starting your new family or that blended family. What are my obligations from before? What, again, I may still want to cohabitate. It doesn't matter about the money. We're living our life the right way, but it's important to be aware of that.
Seems like there is at the very, very foundation, the most important part, which I think is probably the most complicated and difficult part, is open communication and transparency, right? The transparency, 100%. Especially.
Yeah.
If you're coming in from another marriage and maybe it's, you know, a little bit of a sour taste and you're scared and you're trying to protect yourself, you know, tucking money under the mattress is probably not the way to go.
You know,
you want to make sure you're coming in fully disclosed and fostering that trust and
I think that's really important, though. I mean, I'm latching on to what you said, but the idea that almost no matter who we are, to have some financial independence, whether we're married, have a spouse, a long-term partner, to have that financial independence of, I know what's there. I may not be the person paying all the bills or the one doing all of our financial planning, but I'm aware of what I have and what's out there, and I'm empowered. There is a bank account in my name. I know my credit score. I think those also go hand in hand with, if you're blending families, still be not selfishly, but thinking of yourself to say, where am I at in this relationship?
What am I bringing?
Yeah, exactly.
I think to your point, too, and it sounds cliche, but obviously having that relationship built on a foundation of trust is going to be crucial. There may be a lot of reasons coming into that new blended relationship that someone might not be so trustworthy. So to be open, to be honest, as far as the finances and everything else, that's crucial to actually having a successful relationship.
Great. Thank you very much, guys. Combining finances in a blended family requires careful planning. Seek the help of a professional. I mean, we gave you some tips today. The certified financial planner can go through your baseline and help you if you need it. Give us a call. We're happy to sit down and talk to you. We hope you found today's topic helpful and are here if you'd like to better understand your financial plan. We're glad you tuned in. We hope you'll come back. We are Managing to Be Wealthy.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.